The Elizabeth River in Tidewater, Virginia, is one of the most polluted waterways in the country. But it's about to be the site of the world's first floating wetlands classroom called the Learning Barge. The barge is the brainchild of Phoebe Chrisman, a professor of architecture at the University of Virginia. School students and citizens of all ages can have field trips on the barge, studying the river and interacting with the marine ecosystem. It's a large floating field station powered by solar and wind energy and made of recycled materials. This is said to be the largest natural harbor in the world, the mouth of the Elizabeth River, and Captain John Smith in his diaries had reported finding oysters there that were as big as dinner plates. And it was so teeming with wildlife and fish, he said his crew members on his boats could just take frying pans and bop fish on the head to get them for their dinner. Can you imagine that?
I can imagine it, but when I look at the river today, it's actually difficult to see it. What I imagine happening is a river where people could fish, they could swim, children could walk down the yard from their school, which abuts the river, and actually do water testing and engage in the river in a very direct way. They could wade in the river. There are just very few opportunities for that to occur. So it's two problems. It's both the quality of the water, but also just the lack of access to the river.
Do you think that lack of access can change?
Oh, definitely. Although it lies in the middle of a very heavily populated, bustling metropolitan region and separates the cities of Norfolk, Portsmouth, Chesapeake, and Virginia Beach, the residents of those cities rarely engage it because you cross through tunnels to get from one side to the other. So it's seen as a problem. It's the place where the traffic jams occur. It's the thing that you never see. You just drive under. It just became this kind of smelly, nasty, ugly thing to be avoided, rather than the centerpiece of these cities, which it really is.
Tell me about the Learning Barge. I saw a poster calling it the world's first floating wetlands classroom. Why do you have a floating wetlands classroom? Why not just have a wonderful learning center in the wetlands itself, just off the banks of the river?
The reason, I guess, it's the Learning Barge is because we wanted to get kids and adults out there to see this amazing cleanup action and have them really become part of this process. But there was no way to get them to the site. All the land was privately owned by industries, by the U.S. Navy, and literally cordoned off with chain link fences. So we realized the only way to get to the river was from the river.
I've heard that the Elizabeth River is or was one of the most polluted in the country. Why is it so polluted?
Well, the pollution is primarily historic pollution, pollution that has occurred over the past 300 years of industrial use. It's the home of the first ship dry dock in the Western Hemisphere. There are many kinds of pollutants that come from the kinds of paint that are used on ships or had historically been used, and that has now been changed. There's a big problem with creosote in the bottom of the river that came about due to large-scale creosote spills, one particularly terrible one in the 1970s, where thousands of gallons of raw creosote poured across the land into the river when a factory caught on fire and exploded.
Really?
And that creosote was never cleaned up.
Remind me of what creosote is.
You probably know it from the way they used to dip telephone poles in that kind of black, sticky stuff, or railroad ties. That's creosote. And southern yellow pine trees coming from the Great Dismal Swamp, North Carolina, that kind of huge forested area, would be shipped to Norfolk by rail, treated in creosote there, and then shipped all over the United States and abroad.
And is it bad for people?
Yes, it's very bad, and that's why we don't actually see it being used anymore on docks or telephone poles or railway ties. It's problematic because it contains PAHs, polycitric aromatic hydrocarbons, which are cancer-causing.
What about the banks of the river? They're so fenced off that you can't even approach the river for long stretches.
Right. It's called a hardened shoreline. And for, I think, a 6-mile length, that shoreline has been covered with concrete retaining walls, metal sheet piling, anything that's available to actually create a sharp edge where the ships can then pull up to that edge and dock and unload their wares. But all the kind of aquatic life, like juvenile fish, the kind of cleansing that we know about, which happens in wetlands, is no longer occurring. Oyster beds are no longer able to thrive because we see the shore just dropping off, from land to 30 feet, for instance.
Is there any opportunity or something in the works where the shoreline will no longer be hardened, where they'll get rid of the concrete berms, et cetera?
Well, one of the initiatives of the Elizabeth River Project is to remove as much of that hardened shoreline as possible by working with industries through a voluntary kind of program to keep their pier for shipping, but then to make the rest of their shoreline a restored wetland area. So it's a reversible situation. It just takes the will and the resources to do it.
Is the river swimmable?
I wouldn't swim in the river. You also really shouldn't be fishing at all in the river. At the same time, we see people fishing, both for, you know, crabs and fish, even though there's a ban against that. And so there are actually health threats as well.
So you got the idea for a barge that's how big?
120 feet long by 32 feet wide.
So it's powered by wind and sun.
That's right.
And what's on? What will the children do once they step on board?
So, for instance, one group of children would arrive at the onboard wetland station. I think we're calling it River Roots. And there, they'll be surrounded by a series of long basins, which are filled with many different types of native plants. Then the other important part is that there are two manual hand pumps. So they physically pump this water from the river into the basins. The water will flow through those basins. They're kind of a series of tiered or stepped basins. And then enter into a pool, a large pool, about 25 by 12 feet or something on board, where they'll then be able to do water testing. They'll be able to see that the water has become clear. And then once that water has been tested, it will be released back into the river cleaner than it was when it was pumped aboard.
Will there be creatures in these little mucky, boggy habitats?
Yes, hopefully. We're thinking about growing oysters on board. Also, they'll be doing things, for instance, in another station like bottom grabs or eel boxes, where they'll be pulling up these boxes which have been over the edge of the barge and then opening them up into this onboard pool where they'll be able to see all the creatures.
Does that mean you'll find eels in it?
Potentially, yes. Huh. And the kids, of course, you can imagine eels are very exciting for kids. So there'll be live creatures on board that they'll be finding from the river and then examining.
So they'll be seeing how we cleanse the river, cleanse the water. What else?
Well, they will be monitoring the water to understand what contaminants are in the water, checking for dissolved oxygen level in the water.
Can young people do that?
Oh, it's very simple. It's a kind of coated strip of paper that you dip into the water to check for the dissolved oxygen. Tests that even a kindergartner can do. Then for the older kids, they will be doing more advanced work where they'll be doing long-term monitoring of the river. So before they come out to the river, we'll on our website have all this information. They can track the performance of the river over time, see what they find when they go to the river, and then continue their monitoring when they leave.
So what sort of materials are in the barge that you're making?
Well, the barge hull itself is built of almost 150 tons of steel. The onboard classroom and wetlands and storytelling stairs and all the other components are made out of materials like concrete, beautiful, sustainably harvested white oak, standing seam metal roof, which collects all the rainwater which falls on the roof of the classroom. It's then filtered and used for hand washing on board before it's then cleansed in those wetlands and discharged into the river. So even the water system is self-sustainable in that way. Or another example is that when they want to use water in the bathroom, there's a small hand pump that they manually pump the water from below deck into a clear glass cistern above the sink, which is measured. So they can understand how much effort it takes to pump the water. So when you think about leaving the faucet running, you can literally see how much water that takes. So for instance, designing this with the students at UVA was great because we did hand washing testing to see like how many times you could, how much water it takes to wash your hands and how big we would want that tank to be.
I can also imagine now that you're saying that some of the non-liquid waste will be very interesting for the students to follow.
Oh, right. Well, people ask this question too. I think this is one of the first projects that has composting toilets on board a floating vessel. So even human waste will be used, recycled into fertilizer for the wetlands.
How is it solar and wind powered? It doesn't have a sail.
No. We have two wind generators on board and four large photovoltaic panels. And between those two wind and sun systems, we're able to generate all the power that we need for onboard use. I've been asked many times, well, how much has it cost to build the barge? I don't really know how to put a true number on it because there's been so much. It's a labor of love. We've been very fortunate to receive grants from many foundations, from businesses. And since we've started this project, I'm getting a lot of calls. Can you do a barge for us in Seattle?
Might you do another barge?
No, I think I'll just stop after, you know, with this one. The river is a changing thing. And the Elizabeth River Project, the way they describe their work is one creek at a time. That the only way to revive, to restore such a contaminated river is not in kind of one fell swoop, but actually to start with each tributary. And once you clean a tributary, then you clean the river. So they've been working with local communities, for instance, in Paradise Creek, where they get the community on board. They do things like river cleanups. They pull the trash from the river. You know, they do wetland planting, where people driving by might see the barge and say, oh, look, they must be cleaning up Paradise Creek because the learning barge is there.
I think it's such an exciting project. So you are taking reservations now from teachers. What do they need to do and what do citizens need to do to say, sign me up, I want to reserve a spot?
Well, all they need to do is visit the Elizabeth River Project website, which is elizabethriver.org.
There was a wonderful commentary given by former CBS newsman and commentator Charles Kuralt. He said this about the Elizabeth River: when the wetlands really come back, when the forests return to the shore, when healthy fish, clams, and oysters find a home in the southern reaches of the river again, and the sun rises off the Atlantic in the morning to reflect itself in the serene, pure waters of the Elizabeth River, our children and grandchildren will know that we had them in mind.
Exactly. Isn't it beautiful? I mean, it's a very beautiful landscape. And it's also beautiful with the industrial activity happening. Maybe it's just my predilection, but I love cranes and ships and immense, you know, human-made objects. And I especially love them when they're in contrast to herons and restored wetlands. And industry and thriving natural systems can coexist. It's not necessary to remove the industry from the Elizabeth River to restore the river. If you want people to love the river and care about the river, they need to experience it. They need to get wet. They need to see what's in the river. They need to love the river. And then once they love the river, they'll become stewards of the river and they'll worry about its future. And they'll want their kids to swim in the river in 20 years.
I got the river, that friendly river. He gives me everything free. I love the river, that river's taking care of me.
Phoebe Chrisman is a professor of architecture at the University of Virginia. You're listening to With Good Reason. Elliot Maturzik and Jesse Dukes are our associate producers. Andrew Windham is our executive producer. Nancy King creates our feature capsules. Jeannie Palin handles listener services. And Lydia Wilson is our publicity coordinator. With Good Reason is produced by the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities for the Higher Education Broadcasting Consortium. For a free copy of this show on CD, call 877-451-5098 or subscribe to our podcast at withgoodreasonradio.org. I'm Sarah McConnell. Thanks for listening.
I guess that river has a soul. Oh, when I got trouble, he takes my trouble and carries them out to the sea. Said I love that river, the river's taking care of me.